Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I'm here today with a special friend, Jonathan Schaefer. I'm going to just let the cat out of the bag. Jonathan is my brother. He's roughly 9 years younger than me. He's taller, and he has more hair. Let me give you just a slight background on Jonathan, then he'll chime in, because it's quite varied. I would summarize it as he has a background in private equity, private credit, both in the U.S. and in Africa. He was instrumental in helping us launch and found Common Good Capital. So, Jonathan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I must say, it's wonderful to have you face-to-face. You're normally in Africa, so this is a pleasant little, not surprise, but a little gift to be face-to-face with you.
It's good to be here.
All right, so let me start off, and I'm sure you're an avid listener of our podcast.
Insatiable.
Yes. So let me start off and just say, why don't you give us a little bit of background on yourself, maybe where you grew up, where you went to school, and then kind of high level of your career.
Well, you could probably do this for me, but I'll go ahead and do it. Yeah, so, you know, we grew up in Oregon, but moved to Illinois kind of middle elementary age. And so really spent most of my childhood in Illinois. And as you mentioned, being 9 years younger than you, 12 years younger than our sister, effectively was an only child, which has its pluses and minuses. Got married very young, 21. My wife now of 17 years was 22. Still in university, was at a school called Illinois Wesleyan, which was a main basketball rival of Wheaton, where you went. Went there solely to play basketball. Met my wife in the spring of my freshman year, and that ended my basketball career. Yeah, it was an unusual, you know, kind of setup. Was at Illinois Wesleyan, graduated from Loyola University in Chicago after we got married, and Ryan, my wife, took a job in Chicago. Kind of quickly moved to Washington, D.C., where I started my career in private equity, private credit, or what's called a BDC, a business development company, that has now been purchased by another firm. Yeah, it was a pretty typical kind of early financial industry career. You show up at work on day one and they don't give you a mouse because they want you to learn how to use all the shortcuts in Excel. And so cut my teeth in the industry and had it and enjoyed a really, really successful early start to my career. But also during that time, went through a pretty intense personal time. And on the back end of that, and we can talk about this more later, in our time together this morning, kind of started to see the world in a different way, kind of got a new lens, so to speak. That prompted my wife and I to explore opportunities outside the United States. This was in 2007, 2008. So interesting timing from a global economic perspective. But long story short, ended up in Sierra Leone, West Africa in 2008. That was supposed to be a one-year stint working on behalf of a family office, a large family office out of the Midwest, investing what they hoped would be a $200 million plus pool of capital into what I'll call patient capital, or now we'd call impact businesses at the time. That term wasn't as widely used. But that 1 year turned into two living there and about 7 years of involvement in Sierra Leone. In that time period, we moved back, did my MBA at Yale, ended up down in Florida after that, which is where we reconnected, frankly, after having been apart for, 15 years, something like that. That's a high-level overview of kind of the career arc leading up to the time in Florida and subsequently getting back in touch with you.
Today, you're in Rwanda.
Yes.
In light of that, can you describe to us where you are at today in light of your overall journey?
Yeah, I could go a lot of different ways. You know, on the personal side first, a father of an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, so kind of in the heat of coming out of the baby stage into, you know, parenting young children, an intense period, but feel very grateful to be able to do that and to be able to do that in the context we are in Rwanda, and then also as a husband continuing that journey. On the professional side, late 30s, almost 40, which means you're almost 50.
Thank you.
You know, it's an interesting transformation transition from early career where you're learning from others and you're not necessarily in the leadership position, now stepping into more of a leadership position, leading what hopefully will be a large organization over time, but feeling very lucky, frankly, to be back on the continent, more working to steward other people's capital, including my own and including my partners, but substantially other people's capital, as we seek to make both returns for investors as well as an impact on a community in East Africa that that we really care deeply about and encourage, you know, the flourishing of that community. So where I'm at right now is feeling very grateful, feeling very lucky. You know, I had an encounter. So as you mentioned, we're obviously back in the States right now, and ran into an old kind of a random acquaintance the other day, and his sister was there. She walks up to me after having a conversation with my wife and kind of learning what we were doing. She said, "Oh, you guys live such an exciting life." And I said, "Yeah, we feel very, very grateful." And she thought I meant we feel very, very grateful to be back in the U.S. And she said, "Yeah, you never really know what you have until you don't have it anymore." And I said, "Well, no, actually, I mean the other way." You know, I feel grateful to be able to live and work and raise my kids in the context in which we're doing that in Africa. And that's true. You know, the experiences that our families is able to have, the type of work that I'm able to engage in for the way that I'm wired and the way that I'm supposed to be working right now. Again, I just feel very grateful for that.
All right. So this is another question that we ask everybody on the podcast. I imagine your Rwanda experience come into play here. You know, how are you trying to change the world? Small question.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, think about it from two ways. And you know this story. When I applied to business schools back in 2009, 2010, you know, as part of that process, you have to write essays. What's your goal? You know, why, you know, why should we let you into this school? What are you going to do with it? What's the value that you're going to create for society? And what I wrote about was the need to mobilize capital, to move capital from areas where there is plenty to areas where there is lacking. That's really one of the main roles that I see for myself. That's not what I do all day, every day, but in terms of the higher level vision and goal that I'm trying to achieve, part of that is to attract capital to parts of Africa, well, to Africa broadly, in ways that it's not flowing today. And a big piece of that is changing perceptions. A big piece of that is educating primarily today U.S. investors on the reality of the context in my particular context, which is East Africa. Sure, there's issues. Sure, there's problems. But it's not what we see on the news here in the U.S. all day, every day. It's not just poverty, death, and famine, right? There is huge opportunities both to make an impact and to make money and to do both at the same time. So on one hand, that's what I'm really focused about. That's how I feel like I can play a role in quote unquote changing the world, whatever that actually means. And the other piece is building an employee base and creating jobs in East Africa. That is kind of what I think about a lot on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, given COVID, given the pace of, you know, where we're at, we can get more into what we're doing specifically in Rwanda. The pace of growth of that employee base has certainly been stunted. Thinking about how do we maximize our level of employment in the region? How do we love on those employees? How do we nurture them? How do we grow them? How do we mentor them? And then ultimately, how do we help join in what's already happening in that region to build up a generation of business leaders that can further the progress in the East African region and across Africa. So those are obviously big, hairy goals, but those are kind of two ways that I think about my role and what we're doing in Rwanda and kind of across the region.
Just to give a little context, when Jonathan and I started Common Good back in 2017, Jonathan really came at it from this idea of how to get capital flowing to different areas that need it. My passion was really the other side of the coin, which was what impact investing does to the heart and psyche of the investor. And obviously the two go hand in hand. Just reminded as you communicate, you know, your kind of why, it lines up perfectly with my why, which is obviously why we start a Common Good.
Well, but what's interesting about that is, so that is still true, but one of my biggest joys right now is having conversations with U.S. investors who've never thought about investing in Africa, and then actually seeing them put capital towards that region. I mean, that's a blast. And to see their kind of their heart soften, their heart change, and certainly not check their brain at the door and ask them to put aside kind of the critical kind of investment analysis techniques and tools that, you know, that we need to have in place. But so I that's a long way of saying I've come around to your view a little bit more. And
that's not to say
that you won on anything. I'm not going to give that up, but it actually is a lot of fun right now.
So one of the things that we do here is we stay away from fund related stuff or product related information or company related. Give us just a snapshot of some of the opportunities that you see over in Rwanda and East Africa that you are working on. And then the other thing is give us maybe a minute framework of some of the stats on Africa for those of us here in the U.S.
Yeah, so let me start with that because I think that's a helpful it's a helpful starting point. So first of all, and I'm going to assume that people on this podcast have no idea about Africa, just for a second.
That's fine.
There are 54 countries. It is not one massive country. 2,100 people groups, right? Thousands of individual languages, highly diverse. And so I think the first thing that I have to watch myself on is, as I talk about, is this monolithic entity, but it is incredibly diverse. And there's an incredibly large range of opportunities and challenges across that diversity. 1.3 billion people. So there's kind of three mega trends across the region that I think are critical. They're definitely critical for our investment strategy, but they're also critical for the world as they think about opportunities over the next 20, 30 years. So 1.3 billion people today, 17% of the global population sitting on the African continent. Over the next 20 years, more than 50% of global population growth will take place on the African continent, which means if we fast forward to 2050, close to 30% of the global population will be on the African continent. It's just crazy amount of growth that's happening. Second, from a population demographic perspective, 40 to 45% of Africa's population is ages 15 or younger. Mm. It's an incredibly young population. So what's forming there is what will ultimately be the largest working class on the globe in 25, 30 years. Coupled with both of those trends is rapid urbanization. So just as an example, Rwanda today, 17% of Rwanda's population lives in cities. By 2025, well, I guess at this point, 2027, that is projected to be 30%. So a near doubling of the urban population over the course of 7 years. If it takes 15 years, doesn't matter. The point is you've got a significant millions of people moving to cities across East Africa as a whole and Sub-Saharan Africa more broadly every year. East Africa, 5% of the total population moves to cities every year. So just think about that in terms of infrastructure opportunities, social opportunities, and challenges across the board from education, healthcare, power, jobs. All these things are radically being changed on a daily basis. So that's the context in which we find ourselves. And from Fortis Green, which is our group, what we're really focused on is triangulating a couple things, really three things, or else it wouldn't be a triangle. The first is, what are those kind of meta trends, right? And we've talked about a few of those. Where do those trends line up with our own skill sets and backgrounds? And then kind of the third leg to that stool is, which of those opportunities provide an opportunity for us to advance kind of the flourishing of the environment of the population in East and Southern Africa, right? So those are the opportunities that we're looking for. And for us, and I think globally, this is true for lots of people as they think about Africa, is housing and power. Those are our two primary focuses. On the housing side, the story is not that dissimilar to what we have in the U.S. today from an affordable housing perspective. There's simply not enough supply. The demand relative to supply, especially in urban centers, far outstretches that supply. And so we're focused on engaging in that value chain all the way from manufacturing of building supplies down to the development of middle income and affordable housing and everything in between. And so we're looking at lots of things there. And the second piece that we're primarily focused on is in power, and specifically renewables, because that is basically the region has made a commitment to expanding capacity to power, kind of in a renewable way. Let me just say one thing on the power situation in Africa, and then we can move on. But just to give you some context for where the region is at and kind of why we think it's an impactful place to be operating today, a couple stats. 770 million people in the world don't have power, right? Which is just pretty staggering. That's almost maybe one-tenth of total population still lacks access to power here in 2020. As I'm looking around the table and seeing smartphones and computers and everything, right? 600 million of those live on the African continent. Almost 50% of Africa's population still lacks access to power. Let me say it a different way. The state of Florida, where we're sitting right now, 23, 24 million people. The entire continent of Africa, 1.3 billion people. The state of Florida has one-third of the total power production capacity as the entire continent of Africa, right? So huge opportunity, demand far outstrips supply in both housing and power. And so these are areas that we're primarily focused on. These are areas that we think the world will be increasingly focused on over time. And we think there's great opportunities both for investors as well as for our ability to impact the local community.
The other day I was typing out some notes for actually a webinar, I believe it was, and I wrote 600 and then had a M for million next to it. And for whatever reason, I'm like, I actually want to type it out. And when I typed it out at 600, excuse me.
Yeah.
It just hit me in a different way. It was like, that is a massive amount of people. I mean, that's essentially twice the size of the United States.
That's right.
Thereabouts.
That's right. Yeah. And the other thing, remember that young population that I mentioned, you know, so 40% of those people are under the age of 15 who don't have access to power. And look, this is why I have to be very careful. This is not a sob story, right? Like, I'm not trying to sell people on the plight of poor Africans in terms of you need to give money in order to support that. No. There's huge opportunity that's created because of these deficiencies that can be both profitable for business, which it has to be for us to mobilize the amount of capital that we need to mobilize in order to address these problems, but it then can also be highly impactful for the local community.
In light of what you wrote for your essays, entrance to Yale, and then just your vast and unique experience, when did you realize the power of capital and how would you articulate that?
So it was probably, and I don't know, I don't think there's a singular moment, but you know, 2008 to 2010, we're living in Sierra Leone, West Africa. Sierra Leone, for context, about the size of South Carolina from a landmass perspective, 6 million people, 6.5 million people. By whatever estimate you use, it's, you know, probably in the top 10 in terms of poorest countries in the world, desperate poverty, and yet huge opportunities and much less risky than you or I would think before actually having spent time there. You know, not everybody's trying to rip you off. It's one of the wealthiest countries in the world in terms of natural resources. And so I think for me, it was kind of a collective realization over time, over those 2 years of living there and then another 5 years working there up until 2014, this kind of frustration on one hand, but also a true realization of kind of outside perceptions and challenges of, look, I'm seeing all these opportunities on the ground here, and yet I can't get people to move capital outside of donations because they just don't see what I see, right? Because they haven't lived it, they haven't tasted it, they don't have the friends, they don't have the community. It's just a different experience for them. And yet, then you see capital at the same time flowing into extractive industries, specifically into iron ore mining. And capital's flowing in heavily from the Chinese, from different parts of the world, and massive job creation, right? So in 2012 and 2013, Sierra Leone was the fastest growing country in the world, 17% and 18% GDP growth in each of those years, respectively. And it was just a little bit of capital. It wasn't that, I mean, in the context of the global economy, we're talking about mist, right? Drops in the bucket. And so just this little bit of capital coming into this country, instantaneously, that industry became the largest employer outside of government. There's good and bad things about that capital. It had some positive impacts, had a lot of negative impacts as well. But that was kind of a crystallization for me of, look, if we can start moving capital into these regions, and what I will do over my career will be a drop in a bucket of what's necessary. And so I don't have these grandiose visions of changing the world, you know, that much, but doing my part and seeing what can happen when you then take it from an ethical, integrity-filled approach of how are we going to steward this capital? How are we going to steward our employees? How are we going to steward these jobs that are created? It's just amazing the potential that's there. And so that kind of those couple experiences in Sierra Leone started to crystallize that. And that's frankly what led to the thinking that started back in 2010 as I'm writing these essays and starting to try to figure out how I can go get more education and get more experience to be able to actually, you know, kind of get it done.
So you gave this example about money flowing into Sierra Leone and the impact that it has. And then you went on to mention this word stewardship, which is something that Common Good, we think about a lot. So from your vantage point, from your perspective, what does stewardship mean to you?
Let me talk about it from two angles. You know, if I think about taking outside investors' capital, what does that mean in that context? And then just kind of in the global, you know, for lack of a better term, common good context, not specific to the company, obviously. You know, as we think about taking in outside capital, obviously there's a legal fiduciary responsibility, but I think there's a higher calling even beyond that, and using your term from a stewardship perspective of, you know, investing that capital wisely for real returns from a financial perspective, but also, you know, kind of fairly and, you know, in a way that's going to benefit society, right? And then inviting those investors along on that journey. So back to what I'm not claiming you won in terms of that argument, but seriously, back to that of, look, as folks who have the opportunity and frankly, the privilege of managing other people's money in different ways, I get excited about using that capital in such a way that I can share stories back with them that will impact them, right? And bringing them along on the journey with me, with us, that's fun. And that's part of the community building that takes place as you engage people on these issues. As you know, as you start talking about affordable housing and all these other types of things that Common Good does, you engage with investors on that, that changes hearts and that changes minds over time. So on that side, that's kind of, I think, about stewardship. Look, the reality is that as a 6'5" white American, and this is a sensitive topic to some extent, in Africa with money, I have a ton of power. And so I have to be very thoughtful about how I steward that power. And I don't think about that every day, but it's true. And then also with that money coming in and influencing companies, influencing markets through the provision of that capital, how do I treat that employee? How do I steward that employee? How do I pour into that employee, that vendor relationship, that customer relationship, in such a way that when we leave them, they're better off? This is a broad, obviously much broader than the specific term, but that's how I think about it. It's a very all-encompassing and very powerful word that I think sometimes gets lost in some of the faith components of it in different faith traditions. It's very applicable across all that we're doing.
That's why I love doing these interviews, because you get all different perspective. You said something that triggered a thought in my brain, and I don't think that the average investor, let's just say here in the U.S., because that's probably what I know most, I'm not so sure that they think about the privilege that it is to actually be able to invest. I mean, all the way from, you can go to whatever, I'm not going to mention names, but different brokerage firms, and with a very, very small amount of capital today, can put money to work in different whatever stocks, ETFs. And so I think about what you're dealing with in Africa. My perception is that a lot of Africans where you live are not necessarily investing, have the opportunity to invest in things.
Yeah, certainly not in the same way that we do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's primarily land, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, they don't have access to a whole suite of index funds, ETFs, mutual funds. It's just, I mean, for the vast majority of folks, that's not reality.
Yeah. And I think I don't know how you get that into the marketplace, but I do think we attack investing here in the U.S. and it's predominantly about my return and in my goals. And even we just stop for a second and ponder and go, my gosh, what a privilege it is to have some extra capital, and then B, to be able to invest in things that are meaningful and that I care about.
Well, and what's exciting too is, as we've been on this journey together over the last handful of years, seeing people's openness to have these types of conversations around money is new and different, right? And it's evolving over time, and I think it's accelerating. But seeing people's eyes open up to the power of their own capital, right? The power to go, to not only make money for your family and for your future, but then also to see it do good around the world is exciting.
All right, last question. Your answer cannot be something about beating me in a game of basketball or something like that.
There's so many examples, though.
If you could make one dream come true for your life, what would that be? And it doesn't have to be the biggest, the best, just one thing.
Wow. That wasn't on the email that you sent me with the questions. Well, let me do, I'll do one family one and then one professional one. So on the family side, and there's a much longer conversation about this, but if I can get my kids raised and out of the house with minimal emotional damage, mm-hmm. that would be a win. No, seriously. I mean, I think as I think about my kids and I think about, they're now 8 and 5 and growing up, and they're forming who they are. If Ryan and I, my wife and I, can play a role in putting them on a track towards success. And I don't mean that from a material perspective, but from a, relational and kind of community perspective, that would be a huge vision and kind of dream, for me. On the business side, look, we at Fortis Green and kind of just me personally, there's a lot that I think we can accomplish in conjunction with people on the ground in Africa. And so, look, if we can get few hundred employees, and we've got, and this sounds crazy, but you know, a couple hundred million dollars flowing into East Africa over the course of the next, you know, 5-10 years, that'd be a huge win. And I'd be incredibly excited about that. As you know, it's hard for me to dream because I'm very logical and analytical, but at the same time, the opportunities there are so great. And the amount of capital elsewhere in the world is so large, and the context is changing there so rapidly that if we can be a conduit and a bridge for capital to play a role in the future growth and just kind of joining in the journey that a lot of Africa is on right now, that would be, I mean, I would be ecstatic to be able to be a part of that.
Yeah. And as your brother, who's obviously partnered with you, but then also watching what you're doing day to day in Africa and also knowing behind the scenes, I think that's very, very realistic. In fact, if anything, I think you're probably underselling it. And to the extent that we, a common good, play a small role in making that a reality, we look forward to the years before us. And actually, I think what's happening in the world today, just with all, you know, COVID and the social unrest and the racial unrest, I think is clearly waking people up to the power of capital.
Yeah.
So I'm hopeful that you'll greatly surpass what you're dreaming of there.
Well, we just got to get more people over there, get more people to see it. So when you or anybody on your that's listening are ready to come over, shoot me an email and we'll get it set up. Although you'll be there soon.
I will be there soon. Well, we appreciate your insight and knowledge and your willingness to share with your story. And I'm sure there'll be more opportunity for people to learn more about what you're doing. But thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Yeah, it's great.
Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. We'll see you next time. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.